Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the human-animal connection. I'm your host, Michael Overly, and I'm with Dr. Jeannie Joseph. Jeannie, welcome.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I am so happy that we get to do this, right? We can come together and discuss these obviously really cool topics and help other people with what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this episode, I want to focus on connecting to your animal nature.
Yeah.
Which is really
I'm ready.
I'm ready. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because we're all animals, right? Sometimes we forget that. We think of animals as those other things and we're people. But the truth is we're animals too. And it's so important to remember that, because when we have that sort of mindset that we're all in this together, we behave differently than when we think of, you know, ourselves as some sort of superior species and animals as some sort of subspecies that we either own or control or whatever it is, or ignore. You know, it just, things go haywire culturally. And you, if you look at other cultures that really are much more connected to their animal nature, they have a much more peaceful, harmonious relationship where they can experience connection. They experience being able to communicate with animals, that animals communicate to them and they communicate to animals. So that's what this whole episode is all about, that.
I love it. I love it. Oh my gosh. And I agree. I've had my own experiences with animals since I was a child. Mm-hmm. And I kind of stood out from my friends and I felt like a black sheep, right? Or whatever. Like, yeah. I didn't fit in a lot of ways, but with the animals, I connected. And I could bond very easily.
Yeah, you know, there's so many stories of people like that in our world, our animal human world, where people had childhoods where they didn't feel like they belonged or connected, or people understood their sensitivity or made them wrong or whatever. And you know, this led them to be more receptive to animals, because animals accept us for who we are. They don't judge us, and it's a beautiful experience to share love with an animal, to give love and receive love from an animal. And so, yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it.
Awesome. Well, let's get into this. I had so many questions.
Yeah.
So first one is, how do you see your animal nature? And is it all rainbows, roses, and unicorns?
Well, I know you know the answer to that, which is that it isn't, right? It isn't always peaceful. It isn't always, you know, some people say, oh, animals are just pure unconditional love. And they do have a very profound ability to love, but they also have all the other emotions that we don't always associate with unconditional love. They have territoriality. They have, you know, fighting anger. You know, they'll defend their territory. They'll eat another animal for lunch. That's how they survive. I mean, so there's a lot of killing in nature. There's a lot of, you know, kind of rough behavior. It's not always pretty and natural. And I think sometimes people are afraid of their animal nature because they think it's going to bring out, you know, terrible lust or terrible, you know, killing predatory behaviors. And, you know, they have this idea. I do this work when I work with soldiers, and I'll ask them, you know, how do you define your animal nature? And they give me this list that's like horrifying, all the things that they're afraid of in themselves, you know. And it's important to recognize that as animals, we have the whole range of emotions, and all of our emotions are, or many of the big emotions certainly, are seen in animals. Fear is in animals, anger is in animals, jealousy is in animals, grief is in animals, joy is in animals. You know, so our animal nature includes a range of experiences. It's not all just the sweet, lovey, cuddly little, you know, kitty-kitties kind of love. You know, it's also the ferociousness, the willingness to stand up for your territory, to have boundaries. You know, animals will defend their boundaries, that territoriality. And it can go haywire in humans when those sides of ourselves dominate. But if we try to suppress them, that's almost as dangerous to ourselves. So it is really about including our entire animal nature, which includes the good, the bad, the ugly, you might say.
I want to disagree real quick.
Go ahead.
I don't think any of it's actually ugly, but I've come to this other place, right, to see things in a different way.
Yeah.
So there are opposites.
Right, exactly.
So,
yeah, so there's ferociousness in nature, as well as there's cleanliness in nature, as well as there's gentleness in nature. There's the willingness to do whatever it takes, you know. But like, for example, wolves have gotten a bad rep in people who don't really know them well. And they think, oh, wolves are so scary and vicious. But the truth is that wolves know how dangerous it is to fight. Like in most wolf fights, wolf to wolf, often one will die. And so they know the consequences of that. So they don't kill, you know, for no reason or fight for no reason. If they're going to fight, they will fight, but they are careful about what fights. They pick their battles very carefully. And so that in that way, they are smarter than humans about how they're going to use their ferocious energy. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I was making a joke, the good, the bad, the ugly, because just to use the phrase, but the fact is that we need our ferociousness as much as we need our gentleness, is I guess the way to put it. And, you know, I think right now I could use a little more ferociousness because I'm going through something that would help me to have a little more of that, you know, kind of fighting spirit. And it's not that I want my whole life to be ferocious. You know, I don't want to be ferocious in situations that don't require ferocity, but there are some situations where we need to be able to defend our boundaries, stand up for ourselves, speak up for ourselves, you know, these kinds of things. And so that's part of accepting our animal nature, is that there are times that we have what you might call primitive, and only not in the non-judgmental sense of the word primitive, but the base, you know, the back of the brain, the, you know, the reptile brain, that we need these instinctual responses. And some of them are, well, at least for women, we don't think of those as pretty. You know, we don't think of, you know, anger as pretty, or fighting as pretty, or ferociousness as pretty. So it can be challenging. And some of the men have been taught they can't have the grief, and they can't have the sadness, and they can't have the intuition, and all the other things that relate to the animal nature. And we see grief. You know, there's all those studies of elephants who are, you know, if a member of their herd dies, they will grieve. They will do a whole process of smelling the, you know, the dead body or their bones, if their bones are left. And they clearly are going through a process of coming to terms with the passing of one of their own.
We could learn a lot.
One of the lessons is embracing our full nature, which includes the things that we think are nice and sweet and cuddly and happy and unicorny and kitteny and puppy-like, as well as the ferocious and the willingness to do whatever it takes to defend what's important to us, you know, ourselves or our loved ones or whatever. And that is something that we need in balance. You know, certainly we don't want to have those parts operating when we're in the grocery store, you know, fighting over, you know, a roll of toilet paper like in the COVID days, remember? Right? Yeah. But we certainly, there are situations where we need to have it. And I think if we are willing to recognize that, we can bring it into balance so that we can exist with maybe our, what some people might call their higher impulses, you know, the impulses to be loving and generous and giving and so on, and as well as the willingness to stand your ground.
Absolutely. So someone asked me the other day, excuse me, they know I have this dog that I adopted about 18 months ago, who is just reactive and, you know, outwardly to most people seemingly aggressive, even though it was mostly a fearful thing. But they were asking me how she was doing. I said, she is so sweet and so fierce.
Ah.
And I got this, what? So I explained it in terms of what we were just discussing.
Yeah.
She is just, you know, gentle and loving and cute and sweet until she's not.
Right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and certainly with the dogs, if they've had some, you know, adverse history, that can get out of balance, so that that gets triggered in situations that don't warrant it. And then we, you know, that's what our human-animal connection philosophy is all about, is helping dogs like that. We work with a lot of shelter dogs and help them to be able to not go to what we would call a 10, you know, the highest level of activation in a flash, to be able to recognize something that's a potential trigger and be able to calm themselves down, make another choice so that they're not on autopilot with that reactivity. And that's for humans as well as for animals. So that is what our whole method is about, because it the dogs who are that reactive, their world gets smaller, because then people who have a reactive dog are like, oh, well, I can't go out at night. So-and-so walks their dog, or I can't go to this dog park, or whatever it is. They, you know, the world gets smaller and smaller. And so we want to help those dogs be able to bring down their nervous system activation down to a level that they can manage and that the human can also manage and anticipate. So one of the things, if you do have a reactive dog, is to be very, very observant about specifically what is the trigger. Is it another dog moving? Is it the size of the dog? Is it the dog coming towards? Is it the stare of the dog? Is it, you know, what is it, the fact that they're on leashes and they can't escape? Because on leashes, dogs can't do their natural greeting behavior, you know, the sniff front back and, you know, that whole thing that goes on, that little wiggly dance and, you know, that very curvy motion, that's very healthy. And when dogs are restricted from doing that, if they can't flee, then they will fight. So if they feel, if they're in a situation where they can't flee from what they assume is a dangerous situation, they're going to trigger a growly, lungy, reactive response that looks to the rest of the world like ferociousness. And as you understand it with your dog, it's fear. So we need to help them so that they're not on autopilot when they get triggered.
What's the benefit of connecting with and embracing your animal nature?
So like I gave that example of, you know, there's a situation that's happening in my life that's very triggering. It's kind of triggered my core emotions. And so I'm a, you know, weepy in a basket case, as I would call myself right now, you know, and it's just my core stuff is up, right? And so there's time to cry, and my mother just passed away, and you know that there's time that I need to do that crying and weeping, which I am doing. But as a friend of mine pointed out, there's also, I need to bring in some of the other energies, the ferocious energy, the ability to fight for myself. It doesn't mean fight another person, but it means fight for what I know to be true, you know, and for my worthiness, for having a situation be better, you know. So there are ways in which we, if we deprive ourselves of our animal nature, we deprive ourselves of a key aspect of our strength and of our grace, both. So if we're depriving ourselves of our animal nature, we don't have access to our intuition, for example. You know, the way a dog meets you and knows in a second that the dog wants to engage with you or doesn't. They, you know, they just have this, like, you know, and it's more than smell. I know that the scientists will say, oh, it's smell. Well, yeah, sure, it's smell, but it's smell and other things that they're using to make an instant determination of whether a situation is safe or good or positive. And that is part of our animal nature too. We can have that ability to intuit and sense and respond if we're in touch with our animal nature. So it's not only the fighting part, the ferocious part, the willingness to defend our territory and so on, and our ability to claim mating and, you know, make the, all those good things happen, but it's also our what I call our North Star, our sense of what's true for us. And that comes through the senses. That is, you know, what we want to keep our animal senses really awake and in good shape and not colored by mental constructs. So for example, let's say we meet a person and we say, oh, all people with pink hair, I'll just pick something, right? All people with pink hair are good and all people with blue hair are bad. If we have that mental construct, then our senses are not sensing into that person and we're reacting to the pink hair or the blue hair instead of to a deeper level of knowingness. And if I know you've had the experience of being really truly loved by an animal, they love your essence. You know, they don't care what you look like or what your bank account or what your car, you know, what car you drive or where you live, they just want to love you, you know? And that's part of our animal nature too, is the ability to have profound, gentle, sweet, loving connections, as well as our ability to be ferocious.
If we open up just a tiny bit, imagine what more we could notice and learn, right?
Right, right. Yeah, there was Alexandra Horowitz, who does research in the canine olfactory system. She developed a system, I think she dipped string in chocolate. I don't know how she did this, but she had people blindfolded and they had to follow the path of this chocolate string without using their eyes. And they got pretty good at using their nose. You know, like we think, well, certainly just about every other animal has a more powerful nose than we have, but that doesn't mean that we don't have a good nose. So being willing to smell, and it's hard in an urban environment because we're confronted with a lot of smells that we don't necessarily like, or too many human smells, that it can be overwhelming, you know. But if you can take good smell breaks, you know, smelling things that you like, essential oils or cinnamon or vanilla or coffee, even, you know, one of the pleasures of coffee is that delicious smell. And having waking up the nose in the morning is important. And a lot of people are afraid to let their dogs stop and sniff. And they think that means the dog's misbehaving or not being a good on a walk. But that is the best thing the dog could possibly do on the walk after elimination. That's the next best thing, because this is how they reset their brain, is by getting all that stimulation from the different smells. So it's a very beautiful thing. So I try to remember, and it doesn't mean that every walk has to be a stop and sniff every second walk. So we divide our walks. So we have a sniff walk, and it's just Sophia, my dog, sets the pace. And if she stops and sniff, I stop and sniff. Not that my nose is on the ground, but I just kind of look at the tree. I'm not going to get down on all fours where she's sniffing. But, you know, I maybe look at the tree or look at the clouds or just inhale the air and take a moment to get my nose working. And that helps me be more in my human animal nature. You know, because we are humans. We're not my goal. Did you read that story about the guy who wanted to become a goat? And did you read that one? You know, he got like the apparatus to get his legs so he could walk on all fours. And he spent, I forget how much, I think it was 30 days living life with the goats. And one goat accepted him as a goat. One, and this is really interesting about herd mentality, is that the rest of the herd said, this is not a goat. Even though he had like goat skin and ate what the goats ate and did the grass grazing, he did all the stuff that the goats did, lived out in nature for 30 days with the goats. One goat accepted him and decided to protect him from the herd, who said, who is this weirdo? So animals have a sense of who's in the in crowd and who's in the out crowd. That's why it's so hard to change these prejudices, is because there is a biological element to them. Not to say that as humans we can't overcome it, but it's interesting to see the biology of it also, you know, understand that. So this guy spent 30 days being a goat, and he finally decided, I think he even got a grant for it. It's funny, but anyway, is that, you can read a story, it's kind of interesting. You're laughing.
I am laughing.
All right, well, we're going to be right back after this short break, and we'll maybe we'll pick up from the goat guy again.
Okay.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Well, welcome back to the Human Animal Connection Show. If you were listening before the break, Jeannie was sharing a great story about a guy who wanted to be a goat.
Yeah, he wanted to experience life as a goat experiences, you know, because it's like, it's not easy to know what another animal experiences, because they have an entirely different, there's a German word for it, I think it's Umwelt, which is basically the definition of that is the world as defined by how you perceive it. So for example, if you're in a goat body, you perceive the world different from a two-legged human standing upright. So that has to do with all the way they the different senses, and the fact that the goats are predominantly in their senses. There's some thinking, I believe, that goes on, but it's the senses are always predominant. Whereas with humans, it's usually reversed for us. Our thinking is predominant with an occasional dose of sensing. So we can just, you know, adjust that balance a little bit. We don't have to spend 30 days on four legs in the grass grazing.
Well, we're closer to this next question.
Yeah.
Tell us about donkey time and the sense of presence.
That's great. Yeah. So we are working with a donkey that we're training to be a therapy donkey. He's doing amazingly well. His name is Don Quixote. And he's a little miniature white donkey. And he is so sweet. And what's interesting, donkeys get a bad rap. People think that they're stubborn or stupid or something, and they don't obey. But what it really is that donkeys are wired for self-preservation. They only do what feels safe and good to them. And so if you've ever tried to make a donkey go someplace where they don't want to go, you're not going to win. I mean, it is just, you know, if they have the freedom to object, they can. I mean, donkeys have been terribly abused throughout history. But the truth is they have a lot to teach us about paying attention to what feels safe and what feels good. So in this workshop we do called On Donkey Time, we sit in chairs in a circle with lots of space between so the donkey can weave in and out between us. And the donkey chooses who he's going to go visit. And what we teach the humans is how to get peaceful enough to enter donkey time, to enter the world of the donkey energy, which is a very peaceful, very sensory, very quiet place. And the donkeys find it irresistible. So what the human discovers is that they're thinking the donkey's not going to pay attention, but the minute they get into that, I mean, not the minute, the second they get peaceful, the donkey's like, oh, I want some of this. And they want to sniff and come around and be close. And the minute you think, oh, he's so cute, I want to touch him or whatever, and you start petting him, he's like not as interested because he was attracted to the peace and the calm and the sensory world. So being with the donkey helps us get into that place where we are just pure sensors. We're just the ability to connect. And it's so sweet to have that donkey look at you and smell you, and he'll sniff everywhere, you know, and you just let yourself be sniffed because that's a greeting. That's the donkey coming to know you and know your mood and your energy and your emotional state and maybe what you ate for lunch and all this other stuff. The donkey gets all this information just from sensing your presence. And when the donkey feels that peacefulness, when we get into that peaceful state, it's like instant biofeedback because the donkey will tell us, okay, you're peaceful, and he wants more of it. Okay, now I'm thinking about, I'm worried about the next thing. The donkey goes off to the next person. So it's quite a fabulous training. And obviously not every donkey is tuned into humans, but because we've been working with this particular donkey for a while, he has become much more adept at fine-tuned assessments of human states of mind. So it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. Are you kidding me? That's fantastic.
It is. It's so exciting.
That.
It is.
I love that.
Yeah.
Hey, I wanted, so there's a book I read years ago, and it blew my socks off. It was Kinship with All Life by J.
Yes.
Allen Boone.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea. This is before I started doing the work I'm doing, and I had no idea that this stuff was possible, right? That,
yes.
I'm like, what? There's no way.
Yeah.
So there's Life is for Living, right? Yeah. So tell me about that.
Yeah, J. Allen Boone wrote that book in 1956. It was published in 1956. And this is his basic, he knew nothing about animals at the time. And he was in the movie business, and some producers had this movie star dog whose name was Strongheart. Maybe you've seen if you've seen films from the 40s, this German Shepherd who was formerly a military police dog trained, and he could do everything. I mean, you know, it was like an actor. They could, you know, he just had this capacity to follow instructions. I mean, unbelievable. So J. Allen Boone, they had to go out of town. They had no place for him. He said, oh, well, I'll take him, you know, like, you know, they were gone for a month or something. And he said, I'll take him. He had no idea how to, you know, never had a dog or anything. And for some reason, they trusted him. Obviously, he has an amazing heart. He's actually a relative of Daniel Boone. But anyway, so he took this Strongheart dog, and he realized that he had no clue, and he didn't believe in all the fear-based training that was kind of dogs were trained by using fear and coercion. And he thought, you know what, let me just see if I can ask this dog what he wants. And he devotedly decided to just listen to what the dog wanted. And he developed the ability to telepathically communicate with the dog, and they would have literally conversations together. And once he learned this, he was able to do it with other animals. So it's a pretty extraordinary book called Kinship with All Life. I hardly recommend it. I read it late in life. I just read it like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's extraordinary to see that it's one thing for you and I to talk about communicating with animals, but it's another thing for someone to say that in 1956 when there wasn't a support for that idea. So he was just way ahead of his time. So he has this, like, one of the things he says in one of his books is life is for living. That's one of his principles. And it's so simple on the surface, but when you think about it, this is what we're here to do, is to live and experience, to really be here. It's not really about accumulating or, you know, awards. It's really about the day-to-day sensory livingness of it all That's what we're here for. And that's what the animals show us. When we have animals in our life, we see them just going about living. They just wear, you know, what's the next good thing? What's the next fun thing that's going to happen? What's the next good scent? What's the next good treat? That's their world. And it's, I'm not saying that as humans, like that guy with the goat, we're not trying to go, I don't want us to be something that we're not. We're still human, but we can include our animal nature, which means that, some time each day is spent simply just living, simply just feeling, simply just sensing.
Yeah. I mean, this is fantastic. There's a, where's he from? Vietnamese, I think, Buddhist monk, Thich Nhat Hanh, and he passed in the last couple of years. But he talks about this level of presence where everything you do, you know, smelling your tea or the way you eat, like he would chew a spoonful of milk 50 times.
Yeah.
And fully experience that and be in that moment. It wasn't just about the flavor, it was about the entire experience.
Exactly.
And
right.
Our dogs show us this constantly.
Yeah.
Right. We get impatient. What are you doing? Come on. You know, I would joke with my last dog about him, you know, reading the entire novel that the last dog left behind. But we need to slow down and just be in that moment and allow what it is and see what we can notice from there.
Yeah. And that's what connecting with our animal nature does for us, is allow at least some portion of the day. I mean, we'd be saints if we could do that all day long. We're not Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, but we can have some of that. We can have a moment of that every day. And that's what we encourage our students to do in the human animal connection, is to take sensory breaks and maybe just take a week and focus on your sense of smell or your sense of sight or your sense of hearing, and just really see what's in front of you, really hear the sounds that are around you, and to open up your sensory connections and just see what that does to your whole beingness. What does that do to your body, your mind, your emotions?
Yeah, I love it. I do this with some of my coaching clients. We'll be outside and we take the dogs for a walk and we do a coaching session while we're walking, and we'll just stop. And I'll literally say, pick one sense.
Right.
And just tune out everything else and just notice what you notice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, this is what we see the dogs do. Like they'll stop and just look at something, or a cat will just stop and stare at something that we can't see. You know, but I assure you they're seeing something, you know, and that experience is so full. It takes, you know, we don't get that experience very often of being full of one experience. It's like we're thinking this, we're feeling that, we're doing this, we're doing something else, we're hands, we're on the phone, we're on the computer, whatever it is. We get all this split focus. But when we get into this unified consciousness where we're just all in the sense of the smell or the sight or the sound, it has a tremendous benefit for our nervous system. And this is one of the ways we help soldiers with PTSD. We get them to slow down and just focus on one sense. You know, what is the color of your shirt? You know, just really look at it.
It's amazing, right? Just being that present. And you know, Darby, my last dog, he taught me that. He fully taught me that. But I had to be able to get the messages, right?
Sure.
So, yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Ooh, this is good. How can connecting with your animal nature lead you to your true purpose?
I think it's just a wonderful question, because I think some people think that they can find their purpose through thinking, through logic, you know, or maybe what they were taught to believe or what they think they should do or whatever. But if you're in your sensory nature, the way a dog will sniff a person and evaluate, I want to be near this person or I don't want to be near this person. If our sensory system is fully online, then we can sense our purpose, because it feels a certain way when we're on track with our purpose, and it feels a different way when we're off track with our purpose. Like when we're doing our taxes or whatever, we know we have to do them, and so we're going to do them. I recommend doing them, but I'm just saying that's not necessarily, unless you're an accountant, a joyful experience. It's something that we have to do. Okay, so we have things like that in the human civilization, but some part of the day has to be in this other place, which is fully in our senses as a dog would experience the world. And what that does is it leads us to our, like what I call our true north, our sense of what's right for us and our sense of what's not right for us. Not in the judgmental sense of right and wrong, but in the sense of what is in alignment. So what's aligned, how does it align me? So, you know, I helped a friend adopt a dog from the reservation. You know, a lot of dogs, they're wandering on the reservation and they're in dire straits. And we helped her adopt this one dog. And this dog is so full of love, so full of love. And just being in the presence of that love helps us all to feel, oh my God, this is what's, and she's a very high powered person. She's a CEO of a important company. I won't mention which one, but she's, a hotshot, so she has not had a dog ever. This is her first dog. And her first dog is this like Buddha of love, And, when I was asking her, I took her to an adoption event here, and the guy is this, I said, we're not going to get a dog. Don't worry. Cause she was like, we're not going to get a dog. I'm not ready. I just want to look. I said, yeah, we're just going to look. I just want to introduce you so you can see how I evaluate dogs and you can see what you respond to. And this is the whole story I gave her, knowing it was a story, because it's the only way she would go. Right. So we go. And, we go to the section where the adoptable dogs are, and there was something like 30 dogs in crates. It was all from mostly reservation dogs. And, and she had said to me, I said, what do you want in a dog? She said, well, I want a Zen dog. I want a calm dog. I said, okay. So we go, and I said to the woman at the booth, I said, we're looking for a 2-year-old dog who's kind of calm. And she pulls this dog out from under the table. This one wasn't in a crate because this dog was too scared to be in a crate. And this dog just like melted into us. And we took this dog. She said, you can take her for walks. We walked off and we sat down by the wall, and we just, two friends. And we just, this dog just like melted into us. It was less like this experience of just being melted into. And this dog is really, I can't wait to see as this dog, she's still scared and adjusting, but we're using our human animal connection healing methods. And she's just turning in, she's like blossoming. It's like watching a flower bloom.
I think that's all I've got.
Okay, well, then we'll have to join you for another episode.
Let's wrap this up.
I know what our next episode is going to be. We're going to be talking about coming to your senses, so it's kind of a continuation of this one.
Yeah. I'm not doing that.
Okay, well, I'm excited. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you for being a part of it and doing it also. Yeah.
Absolutely.
See you next episode.
Bye everybody. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services. You can reach Michael Overly, author of Let Your Dog Lead, Musings on How to Create an Exceptional Life, on his website at dogsandmen.com or email michael@dogsandmen.com.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.